Hello, everyone, and welcome to Attack of Opportunity. And I got to tell you, Attack of Opportunity days are numbered. We are thinking about completely reformatting the show, possibly combining the... Well, it's not like we have any hard-hitting questions here on Attack of Opportunity. I'd like to think that this is a pretty much informal interview with the laid-back, hanging-out, open discussion of the After Party podcast. Imagine for our third-year anniversary in podcasting here, the Rollmongers Network, of us combining them, us using other co-hosts, us using multiple guests. Well, you think about that. But if we are in our end days, who better to help me wrap things up than Ryan Costello from the No Direction Podcast Network. I've had Jefferson on the show, I am very happy and proud to say, and now I had to have collect the complete set. Ryan can't speak because he's still in his plastic wrapper. I haven't taken him out yet. No, thank you, Ryan. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So
I actually don't get too many opportunities to be on this side of an interview.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you're actually used to, like, one of the things that I know Ryan for with No Direction and Jefferson is the fact that these guys do interviews. You've interviewed a lot of people. You've been in the game quite a while. But the very first question that I need to ask, that everybody wants to know, Ryan, is how long have you known that you are a geek, a nerd, one of us?
So, I mean, effectively all my life, but I guess it was more like around age 12 where things that it definitely appealed to me as a kid didn't stop appealing to me. And just the people around me stopped being interested in the toys and cartoons that we all, you know, shared as common interests. And so suddenly this went from being the thing that we all did to the thing that, why do I feel like I'm the only one that still does this? And then as the years went on and I reached my 20s and stuff, suddenly it was super cool that I still remembered all of this stuff from my youth and from the 80s. And as I approached my 40s, it became the coolest thing possible to be someone who knows their toys, knows their comics and their cartoons. And I'm probably on the other side of the hill now because the stuff that was popular in the 90s is now the cool stuff to look back on. But it was definitely around 12 where I felt the stigma of being a geek, and then around when I was 18 or so when I start feeling like, no, this is my place and these are my people.
One of us. I gotta say, three things I am very happy to have Ryan on the show is, first of all, he's a fellow Canadian. Second of all, he's closer to my age than most guests I have on the show when he started talking 80s cartoons. Remind me to dial back to that question, or maybe we'll just branch out right now. Are there any 80s cartoons that specifically affected you and in your geekiness that you grabbed onto and went, you know, this is cool. I don't care what the other 12-year-olds say playing baseball. This show is cool. Was there anything like that while you were growing up?
Yeah, the two that stuck with me the most, two I was the biggest fans of, were G.I. Joe and then later Ninja Turtles. G.I. Joe, I really enjoyed as a kid, and then it changed producers and something just felt different. And it was when I was in my teens and the internet became a thing, and I started, for whatever reason, one of the first things I ever wanted to Google or whatever I was using as a search engine in the 90s was G.I. Joe and what was going on there. And I found out there was so much stuff there that it was like this deep dive that, as much as I liked it then, I liked it way more as an adult who could appreciate the what went into it, the diversity of the cast, the creativity that went into the file cards, and it was just a much bigger universe than I realized. But as a kid and like first run exposure, the first thing I was remember being a super fan of was Ninja Turtles. It really struck me, even though now I look at it and it's like, these are objectively terrible toys. They're ugly. It's a weird concept. I don't know why it spoke to me, but my goodness, did it speak to me at the time.
I remember having one G.I. Joe toy as a kid. Myself and my older brother Ian had this toy, and this is when you could get G.I. Joe in like the foot tall dude. Just generic guy, dark hair, you know, sure, in the green for tags. Yeah, this guy, okay? And I shit you not, like this 3-foot wingspan glider kite that you could stick your foot, you know, and I guess it's a doll. Too big for an action figure, but, you know, you could put him in this yellow, laid-back, lazy boy-looking lawn chair, right? In it, hang on to the little thing, and you just, you know, throw this, and it was like the size of a kite, you know, a good 3 foot wingspan or more, and just launch the sucker. And one Christmas, my brother and myself got these and we put them together, and it was just, you know, G.I. Joe was always obtaining greater heights, you know, every chance we got. But it sounds like you know the universe. Like,
there is great.
Go ahead. No,
I do. I was going to say there is great irony to you saying that a 12-inch G.I. Joe is a doll and not an action figure. The term action figure was a marketing campaign by Hasbro to distinguish G.I. Joe from dolls. Like, the only reason it exists is because those 12-inch G.I. Joes were not dolls, according to Hasbro. Like, we all know it as a more generic term for all toys, and we usually think of it as shorter and hard plastic toys. But no, G.I. Joe was the original action figure.
That is cool. That Hasbro was the very first, you know, Coca-Cola got Santa Claus, Hasbro got G.I. Joe. It's an action figure, not a doll, boy. Suck it up, play with your guns. I'd say that's smart marketing.
It was very smart marketing. Hasbro, the Hassenfeld brothers, were geniuses ahead of their time. There's a reason that when you think of, like, things that could be legitimate shared universes after DC and Marvel, Hasbro's probably got the most potential if they could just get that thing working right.
Yeah, most companies, you know, they get into something like this works for a decade, and then they're hesitant to flip it over until somebody else makes a ton of money. Up here, being Canadian, the Tim Hortons making coffee. Then McDonald's suddenly decides to make decent coffee after 30 years. And now Tim Hortons is going, why? Why are you making good coffee? You know, that kind of slow to turn around. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, a big turn anyway. But getting back to yourself, one of our next questions we usually like to ask was a gateway drug into nerddom. Like, okay, you know, you're nerd, you're 12 or whatever. Would you say that exploring the G.I. Joe universe opened up all things geeky and nerdy to you? Or was there anything else, music, video game, another show that also broadened you into the, you know, tabletop universe, I guess?
So it was a slow turn. It was basically, I was always meant to be a geek and I just needed to slowly be exposed to it. So Star Trek was a major influencer. When I was in Scouts, at one point we were planning a movie trip and we went to see Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. I'd never seen any of the previous Star Trek movies. I'd seen the occasional episode flipping through channels on TV, but it never meant anything to me. And I just kind of knew it had like a reputation of being a little bit of a weird show and a little bit of like a show for people that are obsessed with it. But, you know, that was the outing we were doing. I didn't have any say on it. I was like 10.
Yeah.
But it really brought me into it. Like, I had seen Star Wars and I liked Star Wars and I still like Star Wars, and my love of Star Wars compares to my love of Star Trek. But Star Trek, the exposure to it spoke to me in the geeky way, whereas Star Wars, kind of like G.I. Joe, I got geekier for it, whereas before I was a fan. But Star Trek, right off the bat, I was a geek for this. This was something that really, there was something here. This spoke to me.
No. I totally feel you. Like, Dad was watching Trek in the house, original series, and the original movie, which was very, very slow when I was like 10, 8, you know, kind of like, okay, this is cool. But I remember being 12, 13 and seeing Wrath of Khan on the big screen when it first came out. And I was like, now this is what I'm talking about. You know, there's Klingons and shit and like laser, you know, all that type of thing. So yeah, no, I totally feel you. When you're that young and you see something on the big screen that's that cool, well, you know, without sort of, how should I put this delicately? Without your regular Hollywood agenda of a certain ending or a certain protagonist or whatever, just that sort of montage of sci-fi. Yeah, that type of thing really draws a young, innocent mind in. So we got Star Trek, you got G.I. Joe under your belt, you're well on your way into the teen years. What first exposed you to the tabletop aspect? What was your first...
Other than like board games, and the only board games I was playing as a kid were the ones that were advertised on TV, because that was something that happened in the 80s. But really diving into tabletop as a hobby and really getting like falling in love with that aspect of it happened. I was on a high school whale watching trip. We had gone to further north than Quebec, and we're spending a couple of days. I don't even remember exactly what city it was, but it was me and some people in my grade, but not really in my social circle. And so I was just meeting these people and getting to know them. And one of them, Jeff Burnett, introduced me to the idea of Dungeons and Dragons, which I knew the name from the cartoon. I recognized it as a brand, but I didn't know what the game entailed. And so he was explaining to me, it's like, no, it's just like interactive storytelling. It's very imagination based. And so just over the weekend, I spent the whole time just asking him questions like, so I could do this? And he's like, yeah, absolutely, you can do that. You can do anything. And so without any dice or without any rules, just with this broad concept of we are going to role play now, I had my first role playing session there with Jeff and with a couple of other people that were on the trip. And when I came back, I just like my social circles changed. I was still friends with the people I was friends with, but now I was spending all my lunches with this D&D group and just learning the game, playing the game, dungeon mastering for them, and slowly figuring out just like where I wanted to be in this social circle, what my relationship with the rules was, my relationship as far as roles in a game. And it was really like, it was eye-opening, it was awakening, and it was probably one of the first times I really felt comfortable being excited about something and being who I am, because I'm a big guy and I'm a loud guy, and up until like at that point I was not good at expressing my emotions. I often very much came off angry when I just wanted to feel excited. And Dungeons and Dragons helped me become a little more emotionally mature and emotionally aware, and like aware of how I was expressing myself, because that's a major part of being a dungeon master. So that's what got me to tabletop role-playing, and that's what got me to greater maturity as a human being.
No, again, feel you. I don't know. Maybe it's because he's Canadian. We're living the same life. I am 6'2" and over 250 pounds, and I'm considered an animated person, right? So when Jeff gets excited, Jeff gets loud, sometimes people think Jeff is angry. No. He's just really happy to be doing this, that type of thing. It sounds like you had, you know, like the same problem going through. Do you mind if I ask, I had a guest on recently that talked about, Michael Kasevin talked about being Australian, being like 5'7" and going to America and ordering a tomahawk steak that's for four, and the restaurant didn't think he could eat it. So then we got talking about, you know, size and myself, whatever. Do you mind, you said you're a big guy, do you mind if we ask how tall you are?
So when I am measured, I am 5'11 and three quarters. But if you ask anyone how tall I am, they will tell you I'm 6'2 to 6'5. I just have a large presence.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, I think, is my broad shoulders. And just I'm just big in a few different ways. Mm-hmm. And the deep voice, like I just come off as a very big person, whereas I'm slightly above average.
Larger than life and the 70s pimp shoes that you wear with the heels, man. I mean, that's selling it for you. But moving on. So you're enjoying content. How many years did you just soak up playing D&D and whatnot before you decided to switch from the 99% consumer to the 1% content creator? And, you know, what was your first inspiration to actually go, I'm going to make something in this world, in this verse?
So I've been making stuff in some capacity my whole life. Like in second, third grade, I would just write these picture books. I would just basically take a stack of papers, staple them in the middle, fold it down, and then write until I ran out of pages and call it a story. And then I would present it to my class, not as any kind of assignment. It was just like, here's a thing I did. Can I read it to the class? And they were not good, but they were just like, it just showed like, I had that urge that I couldn't just like something. If I liked something, I engaged with it. So in high school, I wrote some terrible Star Trek fan fiction with a very Mary Sue main character. It was Deep Space Nine fan fiction, actually. And I often wonder if somewhere buried on my computer, I've still got it.
But Sisko, I'm telling you, Captain Sisko is the man. He was stuck as a commander far too long, in my opinion. Wife and I love Deep Space Nine, man. Sisko was the bomb. I'm sorry. Please continue.
So also in high school, I wrote I'm going to call most of what I wrote at the time terrible. Maybe it was only bad, but I wrote a novel set in a D&D-like world that basically was my first major work of fiction. It was like 230 pages, and this is something I wrote over a summer when I was 15 or 16 years old. And again, it's just when I like something, that's how I engage with it. I don't just consume, I also create. And so specifically becoming like a content creator, putting stuff out there, the internet needed to kind of emerge a little bit more. And as it was emerging, I was really getting into it. Like in high school, I was into BBSs and into basically when I got wind of some kind of technological interaction thing, it drew me to it. And so in the early 2000s, that's when I first was exposed to the idea of podcasts. I guess it was I don't know how to call it, 2005, 2006 or so. My wife, or my girlfriend at the time, was working a job that was very much just like hands busy, but brain nothing. And so she was saying like, I need something to occupy my brain. And so our friend John gave her some audiobooks that he had on CD, and she listened to them. She said, like, this is good when I can get more. And it was like, you know what we could do? There's these things, podcasts that people are putting out. Just find one and you'll get regular audio content coming to you as it releases. And this is the first time we'd heard the word podcast. I don't even know if he said podcast or if we kind of came across it on our own looking into this thing he was talking about. But she discovered Slice of Sci-Fi, which is one of the original podcasts and is even hosted or was co-hosted by the guy who wrote or who co-wrote the Dummy's Guide for Podcasting, which is a book that after I listened to some podcasts, I was like, this is something I could really get into. So I picked up that book, which taught me what kind of equipment I needed. And then I was just like, well, I know I want a podcast, but what am I going to talk about? And around that time, I was joining a lot of G.I. Joe message boards. And there was one website that a friend of mine from a message board had called General's Joe's. So G.I. Joe was back in stores after being on hiatus for a little bit. There was buzz that maybe a movie was going to come out at some point in the future. And Hasbro started using this guy, Justin Bell, my friend, and his website, General's Joe's, is kind of like the barometer for fandom. And I was like, that's a really cool position he's kind of carved for himself. I want that for something. So I've got to, I know what I want my website to be. I know I want a podcast involved, but for what? And then there was a timer that was posted on the Dungeons and Dragons website, and it was just a countdown timer. And it's like, well, this is going to be cool. Like, disconnected from those original thoughts, this is going to be cool. And then either my wife or my friend pointed out, did you notice that the timer is surrounded by dice? It's like, yeah, of course. Did you notice all the dice are set to a four? Like, no, I didn't. It's like, this is a countdown to a fourth edition. Like, they're moving on. And it's like, but I love third edition. Like, I had come back to Dungeons & Dragons a few years ago at that point. And I was introduced to Dungeons & Dragons in second edition. And the fact that I was introduced with no rules was probably for the best for me getting into the hobby, because it was just, the rules were a tool. It was never something I was super passionate for or even 100% got. Like, I know people that are big into second edition that are like, this is how well I know Thaco. And I was like, I could have the chart in front of me and it would still take me 5 minutes to look up my Thaco. So when 3.5 came out and I started interacting with it, it's like, I get these rules. Like, I started seeing the game on extra levels now, including like game design levels. And I started just writing up rules because it's like, I don't like that fighters can't do conditions. I want some way to be able to give a condition in the same way that a wizard can make you magically blind. I just want to be able to poke you in the eye and make you physically blind. This is something that people do. The magic is recreating something that we can't physically do. At least you couldn't in 3.5. Pathfinder eventually added that stuff. So I was starting to really get into multiple sides of this. And I even sat down and was like, I know what book I'm going to write for Dungeons and Dragons. I didn't understand 3.5 publishing at the time. I didn't understand pitching. I just knew it's like, I'm going to write a whole book and maybe somebody will publish it, buy it. Maybe something will happen with it. And so I started writing this book. I was really immersed in the game. And then I'm hearing, oh, they're changing editions soon. And I was like, well, I'm not happy about that. But now I know what I want my podcast to be. I know what I want my website to be. I know exactly all of these factors are now kind of working together. We're going to be this tiny website of people that are still, for whatever reason, committed to 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons because it spoke to us more than even sight unseen. We didn't need fourth edition. There were still so many third edition characters that I wanted to write that that's going to be us. We're going to be the community of people that didn't move on. We're going to be the people that we've heard talk about second edition wistfully and like they've stuck with it. We're going to stick to 3.5 while everyone else clearly is going to move on to fourth edition. It's going to become the next big thing. And so what happened was it wasn't the next big thing. It came out just surrounded by all kinds of issues. They made a lot of poor choices and had a lot of bad luck, but they didn't have backup plans. So that still kind of falls on what Wizards of the Coast did. But basically from the announcement to the first couple of years of fourth edition being published, people were just, whatever they liked about Dungeons & Dragons, they were finding some reason fourth edition was betraying that interest. And meanwhile, I've got this small website and someone is like, you know, this goal of yours to keep 3.5 alive. Have you seen these Pathfinder ads that have 3.5 thrives on it? Like, it's not just 3.5 alive. Pathfinder is a game that is doing the same thing you're doing. So very early on in the life of my website, which was called 3.5 Private Sanctuary, which there's several things wrong with that title. But anyway, that's the name we went with. Okay, I'll go into that. So one, it's bad to have a decimal point in your URL because you can't actually have it. So our website was 35 private sanctuary, but we were 3.5 private sanctuary. The other thing is that I liked the idea of naming my website after a spell or after content from the game. And I was convinced that private sanctuary sounded better than private sanctum, which is the name of the spell that I was originally naming it after. And I forgot that I was convinced this. So I just went for years thinking I'd named my website after a spell. And when it was pointed out, it's like, private sanctuary is not a spell. Private sanctum is. I was like, oh, that was bad advice. I should not have taken that advice. But anyway, so 35privatesanctuary.com was the website that I was posting reviews for 3.5 books. Excuse me. Under the impression that people are going to want to find these books. They might be hard to find. So I'm going to be like, look, before you go looking on secondhand market for what books are out there, here's the ones that I think are good. Here's the ones that I think you can pass. If you share my opinion, this will guide you in your quest to find your 3.5 books that are at some point going to be hard to find. So anyway, we were introduced to the idea that Paizo was publishing Pathfinder. And so we had an interview with someone from Paizo. I think the first one we had was James Sutter, who would eventually be their fiction editor and then helped launch Starfinder and then moved on from the company shortly after that. And it was really lining up with us. So it became a regular news segment in the early 3.5 Private Sanctuary episodes. And eventually we had a Pathfinder month. And so that's the first time I talked to Jason Bullman. Sorry. And Pathfinder wasn't even out yet. I don't even know if the alpha test was out yet or if it was still in the planning phase. And I've got my first Pathfinder interview. And so then
I have a question.
The buzz behind the playtest is going on. Yes.
So a burning question I have, okay, since you know or have met Jason Bullman and Sutter, is the term D&D 3.75 a thing? I recently saw a post where Bullman hates everyone going, oh yeah, D&D, right? You're D&D, because there's so many indie games and there's someone as big with Paizo as he is, that there's a lot more to the vanilla crowd, let's call them, than, you know, people, oh yeah, D&D, you know, Mercer. They just group all players into that one brand, and it really pisses him off. He was talking about it on Instagram. So I'm curious, like, there's a lot of up here, what I've heard circles, you know, there's, oh, you know, you're trying to describe Pathfinder, and it's like, well, it's it's 3.75, I've heard it called, and I have called it, and now it's like, you know, maybe I should stop calling it that? Is that, are we doing it a disservice? What do you think?
So, I have not heard it called that in a long time, but that was definitely something a lot of people kind of came on their own thinking that they had come up with this term. And I did bring it up in, I think, the Jason interview, maybe in the James Sutter interview. And they were very quick to be like, yeah, we don't like that.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it does just make it sound like they're slightly adjusting something, whereas Pathfinder, the rules were more than a slight adjustment. They really did change the rules a little bit, but then opened some stuff up. Like a lot of the stuff that I was talking about, the game needs, it would be cool if my fighter could do this, right from the core rulebook was something that they had added and gave more power to the martial characters to affect things, to affect how the battlefield was
like
flowing.
Adding the concept of combat maneuvers, your CMB and your CMD was huge, especially for monks and fighters. And the archetypes, that's what sold me on Pathfinder, was like, oh, look, I can take a monk. And then I saw a Drunken Master with Jackie Chan. Look, Drunken Master. And it's not a prestige class. It's not a whole bunch of work to get into it. They just slot out a couple of monk things, insert the flavor of that archetype and make it work dice-wise, mechanically, and boom, you got two monks side by side that are completely different, and it's the same class. And that just, when I saw that Pathfinder, I'm like, yes, you know. I gotta say, now in fourth edition, there was two things I did like about fourth edition. I'm not defending it. Wife hated it, wouldn't play it. I kind of like the idea of ritual magic, where there was a whole bunch of magic for wizards, but there was sort of a campfire, read the scroll, and I shall cast scrub my dishes kind of anybody can read kind of magic and draw the big circle that you kind of see in movies. That intrigued me. I thought they were onto something there, and they didn't really pan out. But pandering to the Magic the Gathering crowd by making everything cards. Really surprised me because we play our very first podcast, We Shot First, Saga Edition. Saga Edition was the prototype for 4th edition. Wizards came out with it, and they gave their caster, their Jedi, the suite of cards that they could play in a combat, in a counter. But the way they set up the entire system, it is overpowered, but it kind of worked. And then they got into 4th edition, and they just kind of took that idea and went, wah, with it. And as you know, hatred ensued. Sorry. You were speaking of Monsieur Bowman, I believe first name was Jason.
I was. It's someone that I've talked to maybe more than anyone else on the podcast. As a guest, obviously, Param, I've talked to more. We did Pathfinder Month. And as Pathfinder was getting closer and closer, we were already there on the ground floor. We were some of the first people delivering direct news and the only people delivering audio news related to Pathfinder. And so the Tome Show was a D&D podcast that I had a good relationship with because I was still listening to it because I wanted to stay informed about what was going on with 4th edition, partly because I found the show entertaining and partly because it informed my show. And so I had started a relationship with their host, Jeff Greiner. And as Pathfinder was coming out, he approached me and he said, Pathfinder is a thing that feels like Dungeons and Dragons. My audience would appreciate more insight into it. Do you mind doing a segment of the Tome Show about Pathfinder? And I was like, yeah, that's a really cool idea. And at the time I was unemployed and probably shouldn't have been taking on additional podcasting jobs, but the opportunity sounded cool. I knew exactly what I could deliver as soon as he asked. And so I put together an episode of No Direction, or not an episode, a segment of No Direction, using the same idea that I would name the show after a spell and that would start to become my thing. And in the first episode, I reviewed the core rulebook, which had just come out. And actually, I believe Gabe Marotti even hooked me up with a review copy of it, which would make it the first review copy of anything that I received. So that was a cool milestone. So I recorded it. It was like 2 hours long. I turned it over to Jeff and he was like, this is not a segment. This is its own show. You should publish this. You should make this the Pathfinder show and you should continue on doing that as your own thing, as a separate thing from the Private Sanctuary, which was, you know, very big of him because in a lot of ways he has ownership of No Direction. And a lot of times we do talk about the Tome Show. We say it's either the parent podcast or the sister podcast, which is a weird relationship, but both apply because it only exists because of the Tome Show. But more like the format and stuff, a lot of it was modeled after the Tome Show. Like Tome Show is the D&D news, reviews, and interviews podcast. Pathfinder, I still call the No Direction, I still call the Pathfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. We've just gone in very separate directions, and No Direction in more ways has become its own entity. But the Tome Show is very much responsible for our early days and our mere existence. So at the time, for Private Sanctuary, I had a regular co-host. It was Jay, who was in my regular game group, and he was doing the tech side of things. He had tutored me enough in the editing and the publishing of podcasts that I felt confident I could do No Direction on my own. He was getting a master's degree or something, so he had time for my podcast. He had time for our game. He didn't have time for a second podcast, but I did because I was unemployed, so I was spending time home alone. And I decided No Direction will be me and a special guest, and we will talk about the books. We will just talk about cool things. I'll find out what's going on in the community, and we'll have a very community-focused. We'll have third-party publisher-focused, because that was also something that I was slowly learning more about. And within a couple of episodes, I found out about a cool website called Param Spell Cards, which is funny that you were talking about how 4th edition went very mm-hmm. card-focused, because Param, Jefferson Jenny Thacker, his first big splash in the No Direction community was making a website that took the spells and formatted them to a printable card format. And you could just print your own Pathfinder spells. You can say, this is my caster, my class, my level. These are the spells I've chosen. This is the size of the spell that I want, or the spell card. And you could print those out. And it was a super handy tool, and it was very technologically involved. And yet for users, it was super simple. So I had him on, and we really, really hit it off. Like, he's some guy from Kentucky that I had never met, and we had had one interaction, or had a couple of emails, and then had one interaction like this. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I have the pleasure of recently interviewing him. It was Jefferson that introduced me to you. And what a polite guy. What a laid back, you know, has no idea. It's funny I'm saying this to you. The dude has no idea what an urban legend he is today, let alone then. He's such a sweet guy. I really enjoyed interviewing him. So, yes, I can understand and envy that connection that you have, you know, with a guest coworker slash now, you know, you guys are the Abbott and Costello? No? Too soon? Okay.
I get it.
Okay.
I get what you're going
for. Okay. Yeah, making fun of his last name.
I went to John Abbott College, so I've heard a lot of Abbott and Costello jokes okay. in my life.
Anyway, sorry. You hit it off with Jefferson and...
We'll get back to that. I want to turn the tables on you. What is the urban legend that is Perriman? What is No Direction to you?
What is No Direction to me? I don't know if you're going to like this. So I had discovered... Okay. Well, I got to dial it back. Just close to your age. Okay. First of all, second edition was not my first edition, but was the first thing I tried to DM. Okay. Let's go back.
Second edition Pathfinder?
Picture it. You know, 1987. I'm 16 years old. I'm in a Rush Genesis cover band, moshing keyboards, having a great time. And our drummer had to come up from Toronto. And nights he wouldn't come up, Doug Place, hey Doug, contacted us and said, "We'll come out to the cabin anyway. You know, got something for you." I've had my self-interview. I've talked about Dragonlance and how it got me into gaming and this kind of thing. And he had the basic red box. And we played that. We played Castle Amber. Then first edition, you know. But he was DMing. Second edition was the first time I went and bought books and got into it. And like you said, beyond third edition, second edition really didn't use the tabletop mini aspect very much. You could. There was move and attack and move and attack kind of thing. But it didn't have a grid. And one of my new cast members, Joe Gibson, brought me third edition and sold me on the original 3.0, the finite use of minis and grid and 5-foot stepping and this sort of solidifying of a tabletop gameplay movement strategy with the role play just seemed to be the gimpy left hand finally coming up and blah, blah, blah. 3.5 is a correction, right? Then we get, and then fourth, ugh. 3.75, somebody introduced me to Pathfinder. And like I said, the archetypes are what sold me. I'm having a great time, you know, all this kind of thing. What's out there? I would like to know more about this. So I type in, you know, Pathfinder, and you guys pop up. And this was around the time we were thinking about podcasting. We were using Roll20. We were playing in the basement. I had people around. My son was 15. We were playing Star Wars Saga. And the D&D thing kind of fell to the side. We had my wife's coworkers over playing a bunch of stuff. And one of my wife's coworkers, Ophelia, you don't like fourth, you like third, I got something for you. And he brought over Pathfinder books and did one session, and that was it. I was just like, gimme, you know, that kind of thing. Ooh, I love the big chair, you know, got myself into it. And we're absorbing and we're playing on and off and we're learning Pathfinder and I'm looking Pathfinder stuff upline. And I saw you guys and went, oh, that's a podcast. That's not about rules. Oh, that's a podcast. You know, like I was just looking for some of the arguments and some, you know what I mean? Like I should have paid more attention at the time, but you were there. You were always popping up whenever someone mentioned, you know, you Google Pathfinder, No Direction came up. So fast forward, we stopped playing Pathfinder. We start playing Saga, Star Wars, The Basement Ends. And the guys stopped showing up. And we like, ooh, look, Roll 20. Guys, come home from work. We're tired. You don't want to like drive out to Jeff's place. You could just play in your jammies. You're not leaving the wife or girlfriend. She's right there playing with her thing. And you're like, oh, honey, I'm just going to log in and Roll 20 and we could play. And we picked up random strangers on Roll20, and myself, Ryan Messina, Matt Witt, my cast members, my guys, these people were like, you guys should podcast this. You guys are hilarious. You guys got great chemistry. And we're like, we're doing the Homer thing going, podcast, eh? Right? A Tim Hortons, and I kid you, a Tim Hortons coffee later, I'm like, guys, I want to do this. And they're like, go for it. We're busy. Oh, started on my own. I got them back later, but, you know. So I'm looking at the podcasting, and, you know, there is No Direction. So, I checked out you guys and a bunch of other stuff. But I was hungry for knowledge. I was, you know, I wouldn't sit there for an hour show and then watch or listen to another hour show. I was clicking through. It was almost like channel surfing, you know, absorb quickly. Like, what are they talking about 5 minutes in and how is it set up? You know, being the high school drama student, you know, like doing a lot of this, being like hard crash critiquing, jump, skip, listen, watch you and Parham talk for 2 minutes to somebody back and forth, you know, measure the mood, the way you guys set things up, that kind of thing, you know, the audio quality, all these things ranging through my brain. And then like, okay, I'm like, you know, so it was like cramming for a test that you have the next day, you know. And again, I didn't give you guys the credit you were due, trying to rapidly absorb everything I could practically overnight, but you guys were always there. And not just something easy that would come up. I kept referring back to you guys and watching more little bits, more and more of your show or whatever, was the chemistry, the how laid back and like, you know, like a genuine organic, these guys are into it, you know, they know the community, a bunch of things that I had lacked. I don't know the community. I'm trapped up here. I can only talk to people through the internet. I get so excited. I come off like a game show host all the time. And a lot of people think I'm trying to sell something. No, I'm just really excited to talk to you or learn this or, you know, that kind of thing. So when I got into podcasting 3 years ago, my first year in, and we started this show looking at ourselves. And when I first started reaching out to the content creators, meaning people like Michael Kasevin, this is where the meter catches in. This is where you start looking at numbers. And I'm not talking about how many followers has versus like Mercer or whatever. You talk to a content creator and your names came up again and again. And they get, you know, because of Jeff, oh, you're in a Pathfinder. Oh, do you know Ryan and Jefferson? Well, no, I've never met. Oh, they do this show. Yeah, I've seen it. It's really cool. Yeah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah. And like they would mention all kinds of people. And a bunch of names would just keep coming up. And if I mentioned Pathfinder, your two names, oh, yeah, Parham, Jefferson, and Ryan, you know, or Ryan, you know, but they would just keep coming. It would be the first, right? And like, oh, yeah, I know, that kind of thing. So that's what I meant. Like, you guys are known in the community. Anyone that creates content knows you guys, especially in the Pathfinder world. And they're always like, you know, there's a good example. Watch their show. Go from there. You know, that type of thing. So like someone like Treant Monk, you know, the guy that does the color-coded how to build, right? I was lucky enough to...
Sure, the class guides.
Right. Met him, cornered him, put him on the show, used the same term, urban legend, and he had the same reaction you just did. What do you mean urban legend? What, really? I'm like, yeah. Like, people know your content and respect it. And it's like, well, no one's telling me. So I told him, and now I'm telling you. You guys are known and very well respected and liked in the community. And it is my pleasure, honestly, to have you guys here. I have a question for you. Something I hit Jefferson with. But you know, I'm just going to take him out of the shot here. We'll just because we're interviewing you, you know, you don't want to constantly talk about the wife. So, two things.
We're partners.
I know. I'm just having some fun. Before we get into these awesome artwork of the cards that we want to talk about, I wanted to ask you about is there a character class and race that are your favorite, that are your go-to, and as Jefferson gave me a brand new question to ask someone, is there something that they always expect you to play because you do it well?
So human fighter is very much my default, but more typical of me is I will see what is expected of the campaign and I will find what the exception is. So what can I do a little different? I've been reading over Extinction Curse lately because apparently I'm going to be running it for people at work. And Extinction Curse is the circus adventure path. Mm-hmm. It's where all the players are in a circus and you're going off and you're stumbling across some kind of death cult. And then even though you're circus performers, you've got these skills that line up with adventurers. And so you have to stop the death cult. It's on you if you want the world to continue.
Yeah.
So I'm reading it over and in the character guide, it's saying like, so these are the things you're going to think of. You're probably chaotic. You probably have a very carny upbringing. That kind of thing. This is the picture we're painting for the typical PC. And so I kind of went back to my G.I. Joe roots and it's like, all right, so what if I'm not playing in this, but if I was playing in this, I would want to play a scholar who is like reading up on the circus lifestyle and is just kind of hanging out with all the circus folk. And so where they're all kind of like just like tossing their peanuts back and just being all like, oh yeah, we're just very much of the people type folks. I would be like, oh, that's very interesting. Why would you find when you were doing that trapeze act? And so it, And the reason I say it goes back to my G.I. Joe roots is that you've got the Dreadnoks, which is the biker gang, and Buzzer was a guy from Oxbridge who was doing a study on Australian bikers and just kind of fell in with the crowd and liked it. And this, you only know this if you read the file cards, but you pick up that he was suddenly written as the smart one. And so I was kind of trying to be the Buzzer of this circus group that I went there to study the circus performers. I've fallen in. I think I'm one of the gang. They think of me as kind of like the Fraser Crane of the group, where it's like, yeah, no, this guy is a little off from the rest of us, but we keep him around because he amuses us.
That's really funny. Consider
that's my philosophy when I'm making a character.
That's really funny because I can't tell if he's teasing me how I literally got my entire cast to re-lyric the opening of Cheers for our campaign and offered a hero point if anybody could.
And you
just mentioned Fraser Crane. Two movies, great research. Hugh Jackman, The Greatest Show, about a carnival. The main guy for a DM. I highly recommend this movie because it's a lot more than what you'd think. And second, that your character idea about being the Fraser Crane. Have you ever seen the movie Anonymous about the myth of the noble that wrote Shakespeare, as opposed to Shakespeare, low education himself, that supposedly wrote all of his works?
Oh, Francis Bacon?
Yes.
Like Francis Bacon, I haven't seen the movie, though.
Oh, I'm just saying, I was curious if that's what you were going for, the Francis Bacon of Fraser Crane, the guy that shows up and, you know, the guy with the education that wants to know more about a lifestyle or an entire culture that he's not exposed to, so he can write about it and, you know, publish it to his own culture.
Assume if there's an intellectual version or a pop culture version, my inspiration is the pop culture.
Okay, that was cool. So, you've got the tome. You met Jefferson. You know, how many years has this been going on with No Direction? And what other podcasts have you branched out to on your own or with Parham, as he likes to be called? Pretending we're close, but we're not.
He doesn't like to be called it, but because his name is Jefferson J, and J was my co-host on Private Sanctuary, and I said, No Direction was going to have just me and a new person every episode, but then this guy Jeff kind of was on a couple of episodes in a row, and so he was kind of being the de facto other co-host, and then Parham kind of became a de facto second other co-host. So it was always me and either Jeff or Parham. And so because my podcast already had a Jay and already had a Jeff, he was just like, I'm known for Parham's spellbook, just call me Parham. But Parham is his wizard character. He named his website after his character, and now we have named him after his website.
Okay, sorry. And, you know, apologies to Jefferson. Yeah, that probably broke that down recently, but when one is trying to run a network in several shows, which I really should not try to do on my own, it gets to be a blur. One of the reasons why at the beginning of this episode I was like, hey, we're going to change this show because it just, you know, something's got to give.
But you were asking about timeline.
Oh, yeah, so, timeline and, yeah, like, other things that you're involved in.
Private Sanctuary started around October of 2007. No Direction launched August of 2009. So it was a couple of years later. We'd gone through the playtest. We launched with the core rulebook. And then Parham's first appearance was something like 6 or 7, but he became a regular cast member, I believe, around episode 12. So we're getting into 2010 at that point, because No Direction at the time was going monthly. So so it was about a year into No Direction's life, but only a few episodes, that Parham started becoming a regular member of it. And then then he went to Gen Con that year. I didn't go at that time, and he did some interviews with Paizo staff on the spot, and he provided them to me. And so when you were talking about other things I was doing, the reason I was unemployed is because I left one job to go back to school to get a teaching degree. And then when I came back, the job I left was a school. I was working after school supervision and stuff. And then after I graduated my first degree, which is in creative writing, they just kind of kept me around and just built a position that was basically, this is the school's Ryan. And I filled whatever role I was qualified for, turned to me to do. So I was doing daytime thing. I was doing replacement for gym teacher. I was setting up stages when there was a big show. And so I left, went, got my teacher degree, fairly confident that this school that seemed to like me would hire me soon after, as soon as there was an opening. But I got back to Montreal because I got my teaching degree in Windsor, because you can get your teaching degree in 1 year in Ontario if you have a first degree, which I did. Whereas in Quebec, I would have had to start over and go for 4 years of university, which I was not up for at the time. So I came back and there was nothing. So I was substitute teaching, which was just the dirt worst, because you basically have to wake up as though your day job is starts at six, or forces you to wake up at 6 a.m. with no guarantee that you actually have work that day. And so it was awful and it was draining. And the podcast was kind of the only thing that was keeping me, well, and my wife and my game and my friends. But like, just broadly, this was something that I felt like this is work and it is rewarding and it is nice and it is some reason to get up and do something productive every day. So, and then after a year of no direction, I got a regular full-time job as a, not quite a teacher. Anyway, that's more complicated than I need to go into, but I got a full-time job. And so it was August and I told Param right after he had turned in these Gen Con recordings, which was some of our first con recordings. I had already done some PaizoCon stuff, but not to the extent that we would be known for. But yeah, he turned it over and then I was like, so just to let you know, now that I'm starting a job, I don't know how much time I have for these podcasts I'm going to do. My schedule might change. And so like, you're probably not going to be on the next episode. And I don't know when you're going to be on a future episode. And so from Param's point of view, he went to Gen Con, did all this extra work from the network and then got fired. From my point of view, I was being honest. And it was within a couple of episodes that he came back. The other Jeff did not end up coming back to the podcast at that point. So Param and I then became regular co-hosts. We found a way to balance my new work with all the podcast needs. He took over a lot of the technical stuff. Well, he was already doing a lot of the technical stuff. He took over the editing, which was a major burden off of my plate. And so that allowed me to keep up the time to do more network managing. I would do the outlines. I would book the guests. I would be the one that's coming up with a concept for the show, getting in touch with the people that we would need for it. And then he would do the technical side. And he would always be the one coming up with the innovation. So when we went to Google Hangouts and live streaming over YouTube, that was him figuring out how to do that. We switched over to doing it on Twitch just as Twitch was becoming a thing, because he always had his finger on the pulse on that. And same thing, we moved over from Skype from Google Hangouts to Discord now, because he got the idea that it's like, no, Discord's going to be the next big thing. And when we started, there was already a chat room that was kind of the unofficial Paizo chat room, and that went away. And Discord, our Discord channel was kind of the first Pathfinder Discord channel. And in the same way that we were kind of the first Pathfinder podcast. And so we just kind of become these chunks of these pillars of community a lot, because we just are in the right place at the right time when these things are happening. And a lot of the reasons we're in the right place at the right time is because Param really has a great sense for what the next big thing will be in social media and in online content creation.
That is a lot to absorb. But you know what I'm taking away from that? I am stoked that a Canadian got along for the ride. And you have a job opening right now for anyone named Jeff. That's what I would like to take from this. But no, seriously, call me. You and Param now, like looking at the artwork and the chemistry that you guys have when you interview, relates well to like, you know, this 11-year history, and you guys are still, from my point of view, still going strong. It's this No Direction network now, as opposed to just No Direction. And you guys go to cons and that. Now, is there anything that you're involved in? Let me touch on the fact that one of my personal questions I ask people is, you know, what do you do for a living? I love the fact to ask people this because I've met lawyers, doctors, ditch diggers, shit shovelers that all play, gaming because they love it. And you're a teacher by trade, that you just touched on.
Not anymore.
But
I was very happy to get out of that career. I never liked it. I got into it because I was working with kids and I liked working with kids. But I never wanted to be a teacher, but it just felt like the career version of what I was doing, which is not the reason to become a teacher. Teacher is a passion job and it is very demanding. And I was just not up for it. It was not what my passion was. My passion was doing something more creative. And so, within a year, I knew this was a mistake. And then I stuck with it for another 2 or 3 years. But in that time, I came across Blind Ferret, which was an online comic publisher that I picked up their comic because they had done a published version of it. I picked it up randomly at a comic shop because I came across it and I was like, what is this? I couldn't even qualify it. So I bought it right away, read through it, became a big fan, found out they were a Montreal publishing company, an English Montreal publishing company, which is like unheard of. And so kind of got in with them, joined their paintball team. And eventually Ryan Somer, who's one of the owners of the company, just like offhandedly asked me, so like, how's work? And I'm like, I hate my job. What do you mean, how's work? And he had no idea. And so he just kind of found me a job at the company, whatever it was. And so it was like, as soon as he offered it, I gave my 2 weeks notice at the school and started working there, just doing data entry and useless little stuff.
For those that don't know,
kind of like what happened to me. Yes.
Sorry. Because you said English and made a big thing about English. Canada is a bilingual country, but picture America, okay, and the French all just stayed in Ohio. That's Canada. All the French kind of stayed in Quebec, which has the capital, Montreal and Ottawa, and, you know, that's where you are now. And so, it's predominantly French in that province. We don't have states, we have provinces of the nine that we have. I just want to point that out, because when you say, oh, an English publishing company, it's like, well, don't forget, guys, you know, Canada, we have French on all of our packaging, and no one really speaks it, but it's everywhere. Just saying.
Yeah,
like, so, you know, like, we do have a worldwide audience.
The country is French. About 70% of Quebec is French, so it's
thank you.
It's really concentrated. Yep. Like I've tried to explain French Canadians to Perrin before, and yep, he's just like, so they're the French ones in Canada. It's like, no, it's a lot more than that.
You want to talk about the dirty money out of Quebec? Maple syrup a barrel is far more expensive than U.S. oil. There's some real money shenanigans going on in the maple syrup. Oh, don't laugh. There are documentaries. You'd be surprised how cutthroat that industry is. Forget your oil and your pipelines. Anyway, sorry, getting away from... Damn it, I made a big point of talking about not politics. Shit. I'm just trying new things in the show. It's not working. Let's just focus on you.
I don't even know if I followed that tangent, but it just went straight to politics.
Sorry. Just one of the two things I know about Quebec.
So Blind Ferret.
Yeah. Blind Ferret, the comic book company. And you're like, whoa.
Yes. So I started working there, and I was just doing really like menial stuff. But eventually I was given access to, like, here's a creative meeting. Why don't you sit in on it? And I would just start throwing out ideas, which would get a good response. And so eventually, like when I was working at the school and they just kind of made a job around my talents, that's what Blind Ferret did. I just became a creative person professionally at Blind Ferret. And so for a while I was conceptualizing and developing our merchandise. And then we had some subscription boxes for a while, and I was curating our board games, and we were trying to jump into the board game market. And so I was designing and developing some board games for us, some of which got published and have done well for us. But then we had a Kickstarter for a game that was very personal to me, and it failed spectacularly. It was my biggest failure ever of anything. And so that one kind of stung. And after that, we closed down the idea of doing game division, but we've always had kind of one foot in animation. And so now I started doing a lot of some side writing, some touch-ups, some things like that. So what I'm doing any given day or any given span of time at Blind Ferret has changed considerably over the 6 years that I've been there. But broadly, I am just a creative person that is helping do the creative side of this company.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really cool. I gotta say, that's a unique answer for, like, the, you know, what do you do aspect. So there's always questions I like to sort of like pull out of a hat. You know, I'm halfway through an interview with a guest, and something, you know, strikes me. So forgive me a couple tangents and a couple things we talked about. But I had asked you two questions before we started. First, I'd like to talk to you about any challenges that you faced, you know, for a Canadian podcaster. But it really sounds like, you know, you had all these ins, and like you said, right place, right time kind of thing. Is there any content or podcasts that you're involved in sort of going it alone? You know, as a fellow Canadian podcaster, is there any challenges you'd like to talk about that you faced?
So, yeah, there's got to be. But so as far as going alone, yeah, I do have an idea for a podcast interview series, because I I have a talent for interviews, and No Direction has been great, and I love the conversation that we're having, but there is it is a very specific audience. Like, if you are not interested in Pathfinder, or at least maybe broadly interested in tabletop role-playing games, 90% of our content will not appeal to you. Even if you find me engaging as a personality, find the people that I have interesting, there's a barrier to entry. And so I want, or I have an idea, and I don't know if I'll ever, you know what? One of my New Year's resolutions was to try and get this idea off the ground. But
we could talk off air if you want to keep it under a hat right now, you know, Canadian to Canadian.
I don't want to give too many specifics, but I can broadly say that it's to take my interviewing talents and do a broader audience for it.
Sure. Open yourself up.
But yeah. But otherwise, like, specific challenges being Canadian is that I have to cross the border, and I have to, whenever I'm going to conventions, there's an extra step. And if I'm crossing the border and it's like, why do you have all this recording equipment with you? It's like, I have a podcast. Are you making money? Not really. We've got a Patreon. It feeds into the thing. It's not for profit. Well, it's not technically not for profit. Yeah. But anyway, I don't personally make a paycheck off the network. We have a Patreon that funds the network and allows us to do more projects.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway,
show them your WEG 8 form, man.
Like, TSA.
yeah.
Just exactly.
Say, like, it's a WEG 8 form. I had to fill one out, you know. Crowdfunding is, you know, not profitable, but it's there. And technically, yeah. I will be taxed on it far more than you, America. But
but then also, there's the fluctuating Canadian dollar compared to the US dollar. So my Patreon income, even if it's pretty steady, is actually fluctuating just based on how the economies are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are some specific challenges to being Canadian. That and just the assumption that I am... There's either people that have no clue about Canada, or there's people that have enough that they make some wrong assumptions. Like, I've been complimented on my English, which, you know, I'm an Anglophone. So, yes, I'm a Quebecer, but my first language is English. I am a quarter French by blood, but, like, I am very bad at French. I am as good at English as I am bad at French. And it's just one of those things that it's like, English is a language that I geek out about, and French is something that just frustrates me. I cannot get through a sentence without stumbling across something.
Okay. Are you what they call these days?
Tables and chairs have genders for some reason.
I've learned a new term.
These
gramando, someone that really likes the concise syntax and construction of the English language. These people come after me with hammers because, you know, for me, common is a second language. My brain works much faster than my mouth, and I trip over words constantly. And when you're DMing, this can be a bad thing. My cast call them Jeff-isms. So it's become a running joke, and I always love finding, and I found this is a real term. Like, I'm not trying to be derogatory about anything. There's a great show called Adam Ruins Everything, and they have a hard look at a whole bunch of subjects.
Sure.
And, you know, they talk about the English language fluctuating, always evolving, and, you know, but there are people, and a nickname for them are gramandos, because they come at you like a commando about your grammar. And I think this is hilarious because, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself about something that you screw up, you know, how are you going to laugh at anybody else, or, you know, that kind of thing? Anyway, so you're talking about being an Anglophone. Can you specify what that means?
Yes. That means a native English speaker. If English is your first language, you are an Anglophone.
Okay. One day maybe I'll get there.
Anglo from the Latin for English.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I know Americans don't know the term Anglophone and Francophone, but is that not an outside of Quebec term either?
I thought Francophone was like a very old record player. There's lag. I can't believe we're in the same country and there's more lag between my internet and your internet. That's why I'm constantly pausing. We're making it look like he's thinking about my answers, but now it's just getting to a point where I literally have to pause for the Ryan effect. But hey, something, you know, you could learn about trying to do a podcast online on the internet, something that we've both had to deal with. We were talking about the challenges of being Canadian, getting the podcasting audience. I have a couple of questions. And again, I am trying to avoid politics. I am just curious. In the movie industry, there is a big hate on, sometimes in a small part of the community, about Canadian actors coming down and taking American jobs, and that boils up. And I don't think the world, I'm not just talking about America, I don't think the world realizes how many great actors the world thinks are American actors, and they're actually Canadian. because the Canadian market for movies is very small and has been for a long time. I'm just curious if something like that boiled over into the podcasting community. I'm not talking about the tabletop community. I find the tabletop community to be very welcoming, very open. And if you stick your name on something and go, what do you think? Well, they won't pull punches. I'll tell you that. But when you get down there and you're like, I'm podcasting. They go, cool. I'm a Canadian podcaster. Do they go, oh, you know, have you had any barriers? Any challenges?
I would not say I have. I've been told that I have an accent, which, you know, is pretty common if you have an accent to not be aware of it. What's that about? I don't like being pigeonholed in almost any way. And so, yeah. So when I'm just thought of as the Canadian member of No Direction, it's like, but I'm so much more than that. And like, yeah, I love Canada. I love being Canadian. But I don't just want to be thought of as you've got the Kentucky guy and the Canadian guy. It's like, at least narrow down. I'm the Montrealer. Like, at least acknowledge some specific thing about my Canadianism.
Okay, that's cool. Well, I noticed your t-shirt.
I like your
t-shirt going on there.
Yeah, mouthy Canadian.
Yeah, no, that's good. You got the maple leaf in the mask. You know, now is that mask any throwback to a superhero or anybody? I've been looking at that, trying to wonder.
Yeah, that's Deadpool.
Oh, that's okay. There we go. Thank you, Ryan Reynolds. He's making gin.
A lot of Deadpool stuff.
Yeah. Oh, come on. Ryan Reynolds is.
What?
Have you seen his gin commercials?
I have.
Yeah.
With the 102 year old. Was that it?
That's the latest one, though, about the one where they actually their process of making it. How they actually.
I've not seen that one.
Oh, that's really good. Anyway, just give you an idea. And again, would be no offense here. Just the world is raised on American television, but a lot of the world has infiltrated America and is making American television along with you. Just saying. Anyway, I'm getting uncomfortable here. Like I said, I had a curiosity about the whole Canadian thing, you know, because you've been doing this a lot longer than I have. And I feel I'm just kind of asking my questions the wrong way. So moving on. The last thing we'll talk about, I got some great art here that you sent me. And that's you holding up a banner. The big P on it.
Yes.
And like, let's talk about these cards. These are awesome.
Yeah, so there's a lot of going on there. First, I'll give credit to the artist. It's Chris Kimball. He is an artist who has done work for Paizo, and he is a fan of ours. He reached out to us, and so we put this idea together. He generally doesn't do caricatures, but we had an idea that as a Patreon exclusive thing, we would do unconditioned cards for our unconditional fans, and they're in the style of the conditioned cards from first edition.
I'm just going to put this right up here, like really big, right over top of me, so they can see how much this looks like you. Can you make the face? What? You don't like the fact I made your face better than you? Come on. I'm just picturing you posing, like, you know, the artist is going, now don't move, Ryan. You know, and they're scribbling you out, and you got to maintain this face. For like an hour.
I sent him a picture. I don't have to maintain faces anymore.
Oh, jeez. Oh, I guess I'm old school. Yeah, see, that joke wouldn't have panned out as well for me.
Card is a throwback.
Sorry.
So early on in the show, when we were doing both Private Sanctuary and saying, like, we play 3.5 D&D and also No Direction saying we play the Pathfinder role-playing game, one of which was more true than the other, we had specific terminology to specify what kind of fandom we were addressing. And so on 3.5 Private Sanctuary, we said you were a 3.5 loyalist. On No Direction, we called ourselves Pathfinder Enthusiasts. And so that card's title is Enthusiast, and it just gives you a bonus for being just like really, really into something. And so there's some text that goes along with it. If you want to see the text, you've got to be one of our patrons. But we've got cards like that for myself, for Param. His is called Many Hats, and he's known for his hats, but he also does so many things for the network. So it just is about juggling multiple tasks without dropping anything. And then we've got one for Kathy, who was one of the co-hosts of Private Sanctuary in its time, and then was my co-host on Geek Together, which we haven't even talked about, but there was a much broader, just geek topic show that she and I had for years called Geek Together. And we would just get together and just talk about something that's on our geeky minds.
Let's talk about that.
So she was the co-host on that. What's up?
Yeah, no, Keith, let's go on. Let's get into that vein. Sorry. Don't gloss. Okay, don't gloss over it. Get into it. Don't gloss over it. Get into it.
All right. So like the concept I had for a new podcast that would be about me interviewing people outside of tabletop role playing. Geeks Together was my first attempt at saying, like, there might be a broader market for my talents and my podcasting skills. So it was her and I getting together. We would do 15-minute episodes because I love a short episode as a audience member. I love a short podcast so that I can feel like I'm really accomplishing something by getting two podcasts in on my drive-in instead of one. And it would just be, she and I would each come with three topics of things we could just talk about a lot that day. And then we would each pick one from the other person's list. We would talk about it for 7 minutes each and swap. It's a fun concept. She and I had a lot of fun with it, but it never quite had the same momentum as the other two shows. And around when my first daughter was born, you know, my time was starting to get crunched. And so Geek Together became an occasional thing. And I am very bad at occasional things. I am very good at, like, regularly scheduled. This has to go out every 2 weeks. We have to do a recording every 2 weeks. But once it became like, oh, when I could fit it in, I never fit in. I'm a goldfish that grows to the size of my bowl. And then there's no more room for other things. So Geek Together went from something that I said was on hiatus. And I hate that I said that, because I hate when other things say we're going on hiatus, but we'll be back. And then they're never back. I did that to my fans, my listeners, but it has evolved. It has kind of come back, at least in name, in that we do live recordings every Wednesday on our Twitch channel, twitch.com/nodirection. Two of those, like in any given month, two of those Wednesdays will be a No Direction recording. One of them will be No Direction Beyond, which is our Starfinder podcast. And then one of them was just open for other things. And so Param and I came up with the idea of reviving the Geek Together brand and just making it a thing we're doing. And so we've done a thing where several members of the network, because, and we haven't talked about this, but we have like 12 bloggers and we have regular blog content every weekday, sometimes twice a weekday. And we try and get a lot of spotlight on them because they're just donating their time, donating their skills, donating their insight. We've got like brilliant creative people who do a lot of freelance work for Paizo, and they do third-party publishing. Some of them own third-party publishers like Alex Agunis. And so the fourth Wednesday of any given month became the Geek Together month, where we would just get together and do a thing. So we've done live painting sessions. We've done video games. We've done we did Jackbox trivia one time. And this is mainly Twitch exclusive. Every now and then, if the content is good enough, we'll roll it over to our YouTube channel. But for the most part, it's just like, if you want to come hang out with us, we never get to hang out. We're spread across two countries across the continent. And so this is our opportunity to hang out, and you are invited to join us for these different things we're doing.
Yeah, no, we've got something similar.
So that's Geek Together.
Yeah, we have the After Party podcast, where it's just downtime because the cast comes together and it's like, boom, we got to film. We got to play. And these guys have to act like they have chemistry when it's taking years of gaming for them to actually get to know each other outside of the game. But we're always gaming, you know. So like I said, that type of thing, that if you could pull that off, I'm saying it's very important for an online gamer. And, you know, respect the fact that you got to try and make the time to do that. Let's talk about social media. Where can we find you on social media? Where are you at?
So nodirectionpodcast.com is our website, and that is where our blogs get posted. But if you want to find us on social media, if you want to interact with us, your best bet is to go to Discord. And I don't know how to do a link to a Discord, so just go to nodirectionpodcast.com. There is a link on the banner on the side, or sorry, the right-hand column. If you click on the Discord, it will open up our Discord channel, where all the members of the network are extremely active on there. We have just a major fan base of people that are often chatting, and it's become just one of my favorite places to hang out and just talk about Pathfinder stuff or talk about non-Pathfinder stuff with Pathfinder fans. You can also go to facebook.com/, let me just double check that it's /nodirection or is it /KD something? Yeah, /nodirection. This is kind of my main area of social media sharing. So if anything just weird pops up, because we'll do the share of the article, the share of any podcast, and once a day I will also share a meme. Every day has a different theme. So Monday is Hideous Laughter, where I just show something funny. Tuesday is the one that I kind of slack on, where it is Uncommon Mechanics, I believe is the hashtag. And the idea is just finding quirks of the rules and making a joke about it or making a reference to it. One of my more successful ones there was Luis, who works for Paizo but also blogs for us, pointed out that the only time the percentile dice is used in the core rulebook of second edition is for the Rod of Wonders, because mischances and stuff are now flat checks, which uses the D20. And so it was just like, well, here's an interesting thing. If you have a regular set of dice, you might not actually need the percentile die to play Pathfinder 2nd Edition unless you get a Rod of Wonders. That's not true if you're a GM, and the more books come out, the less true that fact is. But it was an interesting quirk when the core rulebook came out.
Cool.
Wednesdays, we do Dungeoneering, which is just when I find some just cool art project that somebody related to the gaming industry has shared. I will then retweet it. I'll share it over on our page and usually throw in a comment. Thursdays is our Throwback Thursday thing. We called it Pathfinder, and it's either a moment from our, you know, 12, 15 year history as a content creators. And I'll just be like we just did a review for the Game Mastery Guide for 2nd Edition. So I threw up like, here was our 1st Edition review. See, compare and contrast. It's kind of funny how far we've come. And then Friday is Artful Fridays, where I just find a cool piece of art and I post it. I give credit to the artist and I'll share a thing of like why I posted this. A lot of that stuff then gets retweeted onto Twitter, which is an official Twitter account. I'm not the one in charge of it. But then we've also got an associated Instagram account, which is not run by anyone on the network. It is run by our friend Tim, who goes by the name Timstagram in our Discord. And I just want to make sure I'm getting the name of it right, because it is technically an official fan account. It's No Direction Podcast is the name of it, but it does call out that it's a fan-generated account. And what I like about that is he's also sharing the articles, but Tim will put his own spin on it and his own interpretation, which is nice because I try to read absolutely everything we post on the site, but we post a lot of content. So even I have trouble keeping up with it. And yeah, when I've got to share the morning blog post at 9 a.m., sometimes I just don't have the time to read over. So I ask the author to just give me the gist of it so that I can share it. And then I'll read over Tim's version of it. And Tim's gist of it is always original and it's always from his point of view. And it's always appreciated. Let's see. I guess the only... we've got a YouTube channel. I believe it's youtube.com/nodirection. But the other thing that I want to shout out to is our Patreon, patreon.com/nodirection. This is where people can get things like the unconditioned cards. But mostly, you're just kind of helping us keep our equipment up to date, fund new projects. Like, we've had a lot of success with actual plays lately. And the only reason we were able to even consider those is because we want to make sure that everyone has the same mic and web camera kit so that when we're streaming it, everyone is on camera, everyone sounds good. And the only reason we can afford all of that equipment is because of our patrons. And now, we're making about $300 a month there, American, which translates to, you know, a couple of new kits every month, which means that we can pursue new things. So for example, when we launched Adventurous, which is our flagship actual play podcast, that's a 1st Edition adventure path, and it's gemmed by Crystal Fraser, who developed it and was working for Paizo at the time, and that was like a huge get for us. But she's no longer working at Paizo. She doesn't work on 2nd Edition. She doesn't really have much interaction with 2nd Edition. So people are like, is Ventress going to change over to 2nd Edition? It's like, that is a much bigger ask than you might realize. Our GM would go from being a master of this content to struggling with the content that she's trying to run while also doing all the other stuff. So we are
not that I don't know anything about that. Let's start with the fact that you forgot to name that you are one of the other few people. There's only about four of us out there that are trying to tackle War for the Crown, yours truly included. Adventurous is a War for the Crown Pathfinder 1st Edition podcast, GM'd by Crystal Fraser, who was the director on the entire set and wrote the first. If I'm correct?
She did write the first. The first was written by Thirsty. I don't know if she wrote any of them, but she definitely developed them.
Developer of the project oversaw it. Jefferson said, you know, what a great DM, lets you guys go way off on tangents, that kind of thing.
I remember when Param said that. I'm not sure what tangents he's seeing us going on, because I think we're pretty tight with the storyline. Scenes have gone off the rails.
I got to say, you know, this has got to be a very unique interview for two things. First of all, you're the longest and largest interview I've ever done. And it sounds like you're so excited. We're barely scratching the surface on so many things we're going to talk about. So you got to come back on the
show. I could go into a whole
you're just going to have to come back on the show in the future. I'm just saying it. And the second thing is, I got this he said, she said kind of thing going whenever I mention Param, and you're like, well, from my perspective, it's like, and you don't usually get that in an interview because you just like, you know, you pull one person from a pod and you go, okay, we've done that podcast, that kind of thing. Have to go back around to some of my former guests, and, you know, like, sorry, go ahead.
What you were saying about Grimandos, I am probably most likely to do that to Parham of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Because we kind of speak with one voice, but have very different interpretations on certain things that we have both experienced together.
Okay.
And so it's like, I do have to call out, like, you know, in this case, he's speaking for the network, but he's speaking for his version of the network, and I'm speaking for my version of the network. Neither of which I'm saying is real, but the truth lies somewhere.
I think I got an example for you. One of the interviews that I happened to watch all the way through was the, oh, what was his name again? Troy LaValle interview. Are either of you a particular GCP fan like myself?
I am. I believe Parham keeps up on the main one, but I don't think, I'm also watching or listening to Androids and Aliens, and I'm just a big fan of them overall, whereas I think Parham is less of a fan.
Okay, so this just is what, like, this is what I'm talking about.
He doesn't have a problem with them.
No, but this is what I'm talking about, perspective. Parham, right, a respectable fellow content creator might, no, I'm just guessing, just an example, might say, Troy, thank you for being on the show. Yourself being a bit higher the fan would be like, Troy, thank you for being on the show. If he ever came on my show, I'd be like, thank you for being on the show. You know, perspective. Just saying.
Fair enough.
Anyway, this is my example, just trying to spell it out for, you know, the wider audience. I have been speaking with Ryan Costello, and I have so many more questions, and I bet we could go on, but I really need to cap it here. I hope he can return on the show sometime, and Jefferson, maybe both you guys together. We have been talking with Ryan Costello.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
From the No Direction Podcast Network. Not just a podcast. He's now a network and getting into all kinds of things. Just saying.
Fishing?
Nope. Just doing my impression of your picture again as I pulled it up.
Oh, sorry. Yes. No, that's on me for not getting it.
Nope,
that was
nope,
a callback. And
nope.
I even appreciate a good callback.
Nope. That's, again, perspective. Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And we will see you next time on a very laggy Attack of Opportunity. Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight.